Hospital Research Foundation Home Lottery, $4 million grand prize. homelottery.com.au.
104.7 Adelaide's Triple M ruined it for breakfast. Roo, over the last few weeks, we've really focused a lot on Black Lives Matter. We've seen the marches, the protests worldwide. There's been a lot of violence in the United States and the United Kingdom. And luckily here in Australia, we've had peaceful marches and rallies. But we've been really shocked and disappointed by a lot of the messages and a lot of the phone calls we've received here at Triple M.
Yep.
And I think you and I admit too that we just don't know enough about it. We're trying to answer questions about things that we have no idea about.
No. Well, I had a great experience last year where Shelley Ray come and spent a six-hour day down at the Adelaide Football Club, and I learnt more about the past history of Indigenous people than I had in my entire life.
Yep.
We need to learn more to understand what they're going through, why they are the people they are today, and why they're having the issues they are.
Yep.
And people who don't want to know about it, look, that's their decision. But, you know, we as broadcasters on Triple M want to try and educate and get people on our station that can help them become better people.
Yeah, and learn ourselves. I certainly want to learn more about this. Fellow joining us now in the studio, Paul Vandenberg, who works at the Port Adelaide Football Club. G'day, Paul.
Hey, boys. How are you?
Good. What's your official title at the footy club?
Oh, it's director, but I don't know where that takes me anymore. But
director,
yeah, director
of,
Aboriginal programs.
Of Aboriginal programs.
And I might just say, looked upon throughout the competition as one of the best, if not the best, in the competition. Paul, that's fair to say.
Thank you, Roo. I appreciate that. But 10 years there. It's been a bit of a journey, but I just love the job. It's been a dream job. And yeah, I guess some of my passions is not only working with our young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young people and getting them through school and onto university, but it's also my passion is about taking non-Aboriginal people on a journey and taking them on our programs. And we took Tommy Jonas and Hamish Hartley away to the APY lands, and for them to come back and have an amazing experience, and then they become the voice, you know, so that's important to me.
Interesting you did that. Adam Simpson goes to the top of Western Australia to understand some of his Indigenous players and gets right immersed in it, and then comes back, I'm sure, as a better coach, a better understanding coach. And they've had a couple of their players had, mishaps off the field,
yeah,
but maybe they understand the player a bit more and why they are the who
it's
they
important.
Are. So that's the lengths people are going
it
to.
It really is important.
Paul, some of our questioning this morning may come across as racist, but please understand it's coming from the right place, and that I just want to learn and I want to be educated. And a lot of these things I'm going to ask you have actually come from our listeners, and I think some of these things are brutal, but we want you to explain if you can. So to anyone listening, please take this in the right way, that it's about education, and if I say something offensive, it's certainly not meant to, and I just want to learn. I want to.
And just on that point, that is what it's about, is we have to open up these conversations, because have we provided the platform enough for you to feel safe to be able to ask those questions? Probably not. And we have been defensive and we have been closed as a community and as people, but this is all about having the conversation, and I welcome any question.
Great.
I'm not saying I've got all the answers, but
fantastic.
Certainly welcome any of those questions.
First question from me, should we treat Aboriginal people, but should we treat Aboriginal players differently? Because I hear all the time in an AFL change room, a coach will say, oh, I need to treat those boys differently, or we need to think differently about them. Is that fair?
No, you don't want to treat anyone different. Honestly, it shouldn't come out that way. I reckon what I've picked up at Port Adelaide, and in my time probably as a basketballer, we do think differently. Our family structures are a bit different. We do have a different value system and belief system, and I just think if you've got the right supports in place, then that stuff should just take care of itself. And I think what was really interesting about that Michael Jordan doco that just came out is the difference between how Phil Jackson treated Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan, right?
Yep.
He gave Dennis Rodman 72 hours off or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it was 48 and ended
for
up
a
being
bender.
72 hours, but sometimes you got to take individual people for their cases, you know, individual cases about what's going to make them tick, what's going to make them a better player, what's going to make them better people. And I think we don't want to be treated any different. All I'm saying is if you've got the right people and supports in place, you should be able to cover those sorts of bases, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
whether you're Gary Ablett Senior, who gets treated differently, to Scott Pendlebury, because they're different backgrounds, different personalities, and that's exactly what Phil Jackson did.
Yeah.
The players all went down on one knee. So the take a knee stance before the game. We had texts to say, that's it. I'm out. This is ridiculous. Why are the AFL using the game to be political? Some players probably didn't want to do it, but were forced into it. What do you think about the position that the AFL took on that? And does it put some players in a sort of an uncomfortable position?
Yeah, I think I was pretty clear with Port Adelaide that I didn't want any players to do it if they weren't comfortable. You know, I've
but
never
if they
been.
Didn't
pushed.
They would have been looked to absolutely. Say you're racist?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I could see that side of the fence as well. But I just think sport is just a powerful platform.
It is
in Australia. Aussie Rules is number one,
mm-hmm.
and I think we do have a responsibility. I think we have a platform to be able to educate. You know, and you guys sitting on radio talking about footy, you've got so many ears. You know, when I deliver programs into communities and Port Adelaide promotes that on social media, people listen.
Yep.
You know, so I think if you think about what sport and our sport has done for relationship building between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people, has been incredible, you know?
Absolutely it has. Couldn't agree more.
And now you ask any Indigenous player, there's no racism or discrimination on field.
Yep.
Everything's over the fence.
The players are on board, aren't they?
100%.
So we've come a long way. And Paul, I remember as a kid, I remember Sid Jackson played for Carlton,
mm-hmm.
and he was a one-off. Yeah. You know, like he was the Aboriginal player playing, whereas now every team is full of them. So we have come a long, long way.
We've come a long way. And that's what I'm saying. This is such a powerful platform we have. And I think, why not? Like, this is what I probably don't understand. Why are people getting so offensive about eliminating racism and discrimination? I don't understand why it's such an issue, because no one's losing anything. You're not going to lose your home. You're not losing your job. You're not losing anything. This is all about equality and equity and us just coming together as a nation. Like, I still don't understand why we're still defending ourselves when this is, it's not a black-white issue. This is an everybody issue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just getting along.
You know?
Something that concerns me is, or a question I've got for you, are we allowed to have fun anymore? And what I mean by that is, Rue, for example, played all his career with Andrew McLeod, and I know that Rue privately calls him Turtle. Yep. That's his nickname, because apparently when Andrew goes home, they cook and eat turtle, and we think it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my sporting career, I've had Indigenous friends, and, you know, I might call them Wombat or something. He calls me, Skippy, or or Whitey, or whatever you want to call me. See, again, people listening will go, well, hang on, all of that's racist, but I don't think, and again, I'm going to hit you with a heart. If I used to say to a lad at training, oh, did you bring your boomerang tonight? I don't believe that's racist, because we know Indigenous people have grown up using a boomerang and a spear and whatever. And likewise, he can say to me, well, don't go out in the sun today, Whitey, you'll get burnt.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we having fun, or are those things crossing the line?
Yeah, the thing I would say to that is Rue's got a relationship with Andrew to be able to say that. You would have had a relationship with your Indigenous friends to be able to have that comfortable conversation. Yep. What I would say is the names that I probably got called growing up, I let go because I didn't want to be confronted, you know, confront or get into a fight or anything. So I would say growing up, and this happens in a lot of my family, we just took it.
The bad names, I'm not talking
about.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I would just say, I think as a culture, we are very funny people and we take the piss a lot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is part of our culture, right? Yeah. But I'm saying you guys would have had a relationship with your Indigenous brothers and sisters where you both feel comfortable just taking the piss. That's fine. It's probably when it extends past people you don't have a relationship with.
Yeah,
that's normal.
Disrespectful.
Absolutely. That's
We're going to cover all sorts of things here.
Like
so we're going to chop and change. A lot of our text messages, when we're talking about Black Lives Matter, it's come up about Indigenous deaths in custody. Now, we know there are over 400 of those over the last few years. Of course, straight away, the people jump on the line and say, well, what about the white deaths in custody?
Mm-hmm.
How bad is it? And this goes back. It all started with the gentleman, Mr. Floyd in America, George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
We know died at the hands of police, right?
Yep.
Are these things really, really happening? And again, I'm uneducated on this. Are we suggesting that police are killing Indigenous people in custody?
I think what the fight is about is what is the answers to those deaths? And that's probably what we're asking. Like, if they're legitimate, if they've taken their own life, if it's police, if it's happened inside the cells, that's got nothing to do with the police, then fine. But there's so many things that we can point to, like Kumana Walker out of Yundamu, right? Killed unarmed in an Aboriginal community. Killed. Point blank.
So shot?
Shot. Shot dead, right? So we can point to those things and it might not seem like a lot. And we're not discrediting, we're not saying white lives don't matter. We understand non-Aboriginal people have died in police custody. And you know what? We'd be in that fight too. We're just saying we need some answers about what happened to those 400.
So if a white man was shot in the same circumstances, that there would be a national front page story, wouldn't there?
That's what I'm
saying. Is what we're addressing here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whereas, see, and I'm sorry.
Think about Carl Williams.
Yeah. Yep.
Drug lord.
Yeah.
Gets killed in prison. We all know about it.
Massive
we know what
story.
Happened. Massive story.
Yeah, okay. So there's the difference right there.
Absolutely there is.
Yeah.
You know, like how is it portrayed? That's and I think this comes back to, as Aboriginal people, I feel, this is my view, we've been portrayed as pretty bad people over the years. I'm just saying, right?
Yep.
So we either, as men, as an Aboriginal man, I've been portrayed as, not myself, I'm just saying as Aboriginal men, violent, abusive, drunks, right? Easy for people to look at, pick up a paper and understand or read about the negative side of our culture. I just want to flip that table. I love having the conversation. I love sitting here having a conversation with you guys and getting people to come out to communities and experience what our culture really is all about, you know, and seeing the beautiful side, seeing how we take the piss, see the laughter and the humor that comes in out with our culture, see the family structures that is probably a little bit different to yours, but how warm and how warm we are towards each other and how our family just extends so big. And then, and you see the difference. If I do a cultural awareness session or if I'm down with the Port Adelaide boys, the non-Aboriginal boys, we're calling each other brothers, you know, and it makes a difference. I've had non-Aboriginal people saying, it makes me feel so special. You're calling me brother or, you know,
a bit tighter, isn't it?
You know, a bit tighter, you know, so that's what we're trying to do. Like we do not want anything more. You will not be losing nothing. It is only going to make us a better country.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. I think we all agree with that. There's no doubt. I want to ask you about, I would make a statement, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in my lifetime, I'm now in my 50s, I don't think we've improved with all of the money that our governments over time have spent on Aboriginal causes or funding for programs. And I know it's a very, very broad statement to make, but
Money the answer?
Yeah. Is throwing money at the Indigenous cause the way to do it? Like, you know, you are capable of being in
Someone
charge of something like this.
Someone texted in and said there's $14.7 billion allocated to Indigenous affairs. I don't know if that stat's right, but that was a text that we got.
So,
yep.
And this is a very long, broad question, but children living out, you talk about education and going to school, and I know that the Port Footy Club tried to get kids to go to school and then they could play footy and get Guernseys and boots and things like that. Yep. Great idea, right? Yep. Kids that live way, way out, in whether it's the APY lands or little communities, would they want to come to the city and come to school with us? Or like, what would be your answer to that?
I think there's a mixed bag. Where do I start with this one? So the work that we do in remote communities, it's the reason I like taking non-Aboriginal people up there is because you get to see the lack of access to services, right? Last week, one of my cousins posted a picture. He was trying to purchase, I think it was some cream, moisturising cream.
Yep.
It was. Do you know how much that was?
Five times more than what you get.
$38.
Yeah, because it's a remote.
Right, so you're thinking about...
You're not going to buy
you've got
that,
no
eh?
Jobs. There's limited jobs in remote communities. The cost of living is through the roof, right? I mean, you think about stuff like there's no hairdressers. There's no furniture stores. There's no sports stores. There's no, you can't buy things that we just can just go down the street and buy. So that becomes, I think, a major issue for us. And yet, I don't know what the number is that's spent in Aboriginal communities, but we want to be able to offer opportunities for our young people to say, you know what, I wouldn't mind going to Adelaide to get an education. I wouldn't mind finishing my year 12. Wouldn't mind going to university. Because what we know is if we can get an Aboriginal young person into university, then there is no gap.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be talking about a gap.
Yep.
I feel sitting here with you brothers, there's no gap between us. I feel like I can do whatever I want.
Of course you can.
Right? And I come from Kinibba, Sejuna. I grew up there, but my mother brought me to Adelaide. I finished my high school, went to university. I feel like I'm on a level playing field. And that's all it is. It's a level playing field. But we've been kicking into the wind for too long, and I'm sorry to use a footy analogy, but we've been kicking into the wind for so long.
I've been to Ceduna. So when you go back to Ceduna, I mean, they are your people, but I know that there are buses that come into the town, you know, each day. I don't know, I feel that they're not connected to the people in Ceduna itself. I mean, is that a fair statement? They're living out, is it Yellowtar?
Yellowtar and Oak Valley, No, there is a bit of a disconnection, absolutely. I mean, that's a tough one, you know, because I guess my mother was pretty strong, and that's what it comes back to, all of us, you know, where would we be if it wasn't for strong parents and parents that pushed you? And unfortunately, we don't have those in some of our families and communities where there's good role modelling in place, you know, and that's probably why I'm so passionate about this space. And I've been trying to build this leadership centre, boarding facility for about 4 years here in Adelaide, because that's what I want to be. I want to be able to create a centre of excellence that brings young people from regional remote communities and gives them an education and an opportunity. Mm.
Yeah. Paulie, we had a text that was pretty blunt. Said, I live in a street, we've got a housing trust not far down the road, and an Indigenous family comes in, they have parties all night, they get drunk, they have domestic violence, we have the police come in, they exit out the family, then another family comes in. You know, they say it doesn't happen with the Italians or the Greeks or whoever else in the street. He said, I'm sick of it. How do you talk about those situations, and how do you defend those and, you know, stories that are out in the suburbs?
My answer to that would be there would be plenty of people in Adelaide that have those experiences with non-Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
So it's an issue, it's not a black issue.
No, they're highlighting it as a black issue, but...
Correct. I've been saying this the whole time. It's like the policies that are being put in place, like whether you're thinking about, I don't know if you guys remember the intervention into Northern Territory, which removed Aboriginal kids from families that were being abused. 100%, I'm saying I'm a big advocate for abuse, right? Especially with children, so... That though,
big advocate for going in and getting the kids out of families.
Well, you've got to remove those situations.
Kids abuse,
absolutely,
getting abused,
100%. No, that's just, it's not on, right? So, but that policy only impacted Aboriginal people. Yeah. Now, you can't sit there and say there's no non-Aboriginal people doing the same thing.
Oh, well, we know it's happening in the
You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah, definitely.
But it seems to get highlighted as an Aboriginal issue, or, you know, if you... We've all got had bad neighbours.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah, that was just a text that 100%. We got in and wanted to ask.
But this is what, listening, this is what they're saying.
Yep.
All right, I want to ask you another difficult one. In the parklands, when we see groups of Indigenous people sitting there, sometimes if you see in the West Parklands, they can be there just about every day.
Yep.
One thing I always think of, and I mean this seriously, is just the boredom factor. They're just, you know, they're there all day, every day. You know, it seems to be a lot of days. Mm. Where are they from? What are they doing? Where do they live? Have they got housing at night? How are they getting looked after? And what can we do for those people?
I don't know where they live. I've actually come from, I used to work for Aboriginal Housing for the government, and housing is a real, another focus area of mine if you haven't got a roof over your head, there's nothing, you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So housing is the platform, right? But I don't know where they come from. But if you think about our Aboriginal people at the moment, what do you think is the average occupancy per Aboriginal household? What do you think that number is?
How many people in it?
Yeah.
I would say it's high.
It's more than non-Indigenous.
So you're looking at 12.
12.
Shivers.
12 people in 12, a house.
12 people in a house. So you think about...
Is that out of necessity because they haven't got the housing? Is that what
correct,
you're saying?
Yeah. Right. So how do we get access to housing? Because we can't access the private rental market. Home ownership's a big reach.
Yep.
Right? So you're thinking about, you're eliminating two areas then. So now we're coming to rely on social housing, right? So the housing trust. So there's only limited stock with that as well.
Mm.
Some of them people probably come down just because they need to access health services. I know a lot of them are accessing the hospitals and health. So where do they go after that?
Mm.
The hospitals can't keep them,
you
know? So housing is absolutely, homelessness in our communities is absolutely rife right now.
So those people could actually be homeless?
Absolutely.
Really, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. 100%. And what do we do with homeless people who aren't Aboriginal?
Yep, there's a big issue there. We cover it on the show.
Hutt Street Centre and Hutt Street Centre, like
yeah, but they're probably bursting out the seams.
Yeah, you know,
so it's a real issue at the moment.
Paulie, we did a segment last week or earlier in the week about the coon cheese debate, right? Which coon cheese come from a guy with a surname Coon back in 1870. Obviously we know all about it. Everyone knows all about it. But the discussion was, does that need to change its name? I thought, sitting here, it is Edward Coon is his name. He created the cheese. He's actually got a process called cooning, which is the way that they make this type of cheese. I thought, gee, it's hard to change Coon cheese if that's his surname. Ditz thought, yeah, probably should, because if it can help people not deal with racism and, you know, they might sell more because lots of people might think, well done for them. Even though it might cost some money in the short term, it might be a bigger brand because of the morals of the company. Where do you stand, and where do you think most Indigenous people stand about things like that? Because then we got a lot of text. Do you change the name Kanalpan, or do you change the name Black Point, or Coonawarra, or all these different things that were coming to us? Yeah. Where do you stand on like a coon cheese situation?
I'm probably going to be with Ditzy on this one, but only because non-Aboriginal people used that against me in school.
Yeah, and we know it's one of the worst names that Indigenous people can be called, but when it's someone's surname.
I wouldn't change it. We eat it. I gave it to my kids this morning on their sandwiches, you know what I mean? So,
So you don't look at it when you buy it. You would have flashbacks, I presume.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
You still know that it wasn't named coon cheese because of the racist term.
Yeah. The only thing I would encourage is a lot of non-Aboriginal businesses have made profits off Aboriginal names without having Aboriginal people involved.
Not that that's
so. So if you're thinking about Coonawarra and all those sorts of places,
is Coonawarra tied to anything to do with Indigenous?
Well, I'm not sure because it's not my language, right? But I'm sure the Kaurna people would probably pick it up. Is it Penfolds? I don't know who it is. But
Coonawarra is just an area,
a whole area. Yeah, so you know what I'm saying. So that would be something I would love to be able to go forward going, you know, businesses, non-Aboriginal businesses, because it's all about helping us, right? Because honestly, I talked about that analogy before, but we need a help. We need a hand.
Yep.
You know, like we need to help navigate this world and this life. And there's not enough of us, you know, 3% of the population, there's not enough of us to understand how is home ownership possible?
Mm.
How is creating a business going to be sustainable for our family and our communities, you know? So the work you think about, the work that we have to put into some of our Indigenous players just to get on the field, you know, like I got told a stat.
And make them comfortable in the city.
Yep. And I got told a stat, Roo, the difference, the hours in personal development difference between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal kid leading up to the combine is about 250 hours.
Difference between, for an Indigenous player to a non-Indigenous player. Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me. Matt Rendell had tried to, talk about it and probably didn't word it correctly.
Well, he got run out of town, didn't he?
Well, he got called a racist. And and also, it's what can we do as non-Indigenous people to help? What's the easiest things people can do?
Yeah, I've been thinking a little bit about this. And how can we change, whether it's the national curriculum in implementing Aboriginal studies right through schooling, right from reception. You think about our education, all of us three sitting here, four. Did you get taught about anything about Aboriginal history or
this
culture?
This is a great point.
Not enough.
Paul,
nothing.
This is a real good point. I'm on your side here. I've thought about this before, and I think I've mentioned it to you. From grade one, we should be doing, it's our history.
100%.
Because do you know in Africa, and this is a far stretch, but kids learn Xhosa, Zulu, like three or four different languages, right from the word go. And what the reason I believe in this, Paul, is I think if we understand better, you know, the Indigenous boy that sits next to me or girl in class, if I understand them and know more about surely you're going to understand more, aren't
Correct.
You? Well, I'm not just saying as you're here. Yeah. I really, really believe, because I know it happens in Africa.
Yep. You think about New Zealand?
Yeah.
They Māori culture. They're doing the haka.
Yeah.
Year three, year four, you know, like. Well,
and you tend to be, not angry, but you tend to be anti things you don't quite understand, don't you? Think it's too hard.
Easy. Absolutely.
Whereas if, you're right, from, and little kids aren't, I don't think they're nasty and racist. So if you're a little 5-year old in grade one sitting next to Johnny, who's an Indigenous boy, well, he's just going to be your mate, isn't
correct.
He?
100%.
And you're going to learn about it. So yeah. I am on your side.
Till he beats you at footy.
That's right, exactly.
Till he wins the 100.
So we're talking about housing and things like that. And I want to go back to the question I asked you about $14 billion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like you, it'd be great if you could be involved at that level where let's channel the money. Let's keep giving the money. No worries about that. Let's put it in the right areas. I think to throw money at
more into education
and say, you know, here's $1 billion, go and do what you want with it. It will get misspent. It's not going to be spent in the right areas.
Yeah. And what we're probably saying with that too is you'll find a lot of that money actually goes to non-Aboriginal organisations and people. So we want to put some of that money into the hands of us and us make those decisions. And that's probably part of the problem is an organisation will just rock up on our doorstep and think they have all the answers, you know, because they won the tender. And right, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're saying put that money back in our hands so we can actually make these decisions for ourselves.
And you know what? I guess if you've never ever had a house before and you don't know how to run a house on a daily basis and all of a sudden you get given one, you probably are going to make mistakes. You probably are going to mess it up in a way, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a part for us as Aboriginal people to play as well. Like we have to get on board with this as well, you know. Like we have to make changes, and that's, you know, if I think about the programs that we run, we're always pushing our kids. You know, we can't use we can't use our culture as a reason why we can't achieve something, right?
Yep.
So that's why I'm always big on.
Does that happen though, Paulie?
Probably does. You know, it's probably going to be a little bit controversial saying that, but.
Honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there is definitely a role that we need to play, but we're not going to be able to get there if we're always arguing over these things like, well, all lives matter.
Yeah.
You know, non-Aboriginal people die in prison too, you know, like that's not the answer. You know, those responses aren't what we are asking, and we're not saying all lives don't matter. We're just saying at the moment is
get it closer to even.
Yeah, and you know, like we just want some answers and put money in, put the funding into our hands to make the decisions. You know, stuff like that. So, you know, it's. I don't think it's hard.
No,
I don't think it's actually that hard. Like I said earlier, it's not. No one's going to lose anything. You two aren't going to lose your house. All right.
No,
you're not going to lose your jobs.
Yeah.
You know, it's only going to make us a better nation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Paul, I've really enjoyed this, and I'm sure at some stage we've upset somebody with the questioning or whatever, but we, as I said at the start, we've tried to come from the right place. It's been all about education, and the more we can chat to you, the better off we're all going to be. So thank you so much.
No worries at all. Anytime.
Hospital Research Foundation Home Lottery, $4 million grand prize. Homelottery.com.au.